This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. A recent survey released by Public Citizen and the Treatment Advocacy Center says state prisons and county jails can have as many as 10 times more seriously ill, mentally ill inmates than state psychiatric hospitals. Many jails and prisons have internal divisions to care for the mentally ill, and many seek the help of outside mental health services. Here to talk about the treatment options for local inmates with mental illness are Court and Jail Services Division Commander for the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office, Major Charmaine McGuffey, the Director of Mental Health Unit at the Hamilton County Justice Center, Dr. Roy Fouch, and Joanna Lowry, Associate Director of Talbert House. Later in the show, we'll look at treatment options for inmates after they've been released. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Joanna, Charmaine, and Roy, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
So according to the survey, it looked at numbers from 2004 through 2005 that previously were unpublished. Close to 2 million prisoners across the U.S., about 320,000, the estimated number of prisoners who are seriously mentally ill. And the national average is about 3-to-1 odds of a seriously mentally ill person being in jail or prison instead of the hospital. So, in looking at these numbers, Roy, I just wonder why so many mentally ill individuals end up in jails and prisons.
Well, I think we can go all the way back to the 70s when the deinstitutionalization of the mental hospitals began. And a lot of the people that were hospitalized at that time were released into the community, and there were services that were to follow them. And there were some services that did many services, and they've improved over time. But I think it still puts a lot of mentally ill people in our communities, and for a variety of reasons, they come into contact with law enforcement. Sometimes they can be charged with things like trespassing because they might be a nuisance because they're hanging around someplace. They pick up theft charges. They pick up charges like that sometimes. They're more susceptible, I think, to being involved in drug abuse and alcoholism. Those things have become increasingly easy to access. Sometimes the individuals do not take their medications. Sometimes they don't show up for their appointments in their community mental health center. And once they come off their medicines and their symptoms start reappearing, they're more likely to act out with bizarre behavior or things such as that. They often have poor coping skills, things of that nature.
Deinstitutionalization. Now, there were good intents behind that, weren't there, when that whole movement started?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, people were locked into mental institutions. I've worked in some of them, and they would be in there for years and years. And the quality of life just was not very humane in some instances.
But I guess this is an unintended consequence, is that we end up having more and more of these folks in jail then.
Exactly. A higher percentage of the mentally ill probably will end up in jail. I think I saw something, a statistic that said 40% of the mentally ill will have some contact with the criminal justice system in their lifetime.
Hmm. Charmaine, what's the situation at the Hamilton County Jail in terms of the number of mentally ill inmates that you're dealing with?
Well, you know, Mark, overall, we have the third largest jail in the state of Ohio. Having said that, we're also the largest mental health facility in the region. 40% of our inmate population struggles with mental illness. We see these people time and again. Oftentimes, they come in and out of our jail on a very frequent basis. We know them. Our officers are trained and actually acquire a very high skill level when we're dealing with mental illness because we see it so much daily. Our officers go through 40 hours of training. It's a crisis intervention training, and we'll send those officers through that training that are working in our mental health unit. Now, the mental health unit houses 48 beds, and those are 48 prisoners that are under some very high-level scrutiny. But then what happens in the jail is, because there are so many, we intersperse them throughout the population. So every one of our officers in the jail, every jail service officer is likely to deal with someone with mental illness during the course of their regular duty every day.
And what's the process, Charmaine, that the jail uses to determine if someone needs treatment? Is it a matter of observation by the arresting officer, or is there an intake officer who determines this?
Well, we do have medical staff at our intake area. So when people are brought in, we do a very routine mental health screening, and we catch a lot of people coming through that screening who will exhibit signs of mental illness or just simply tell us, or oftentimes we know them. You know, they come in and out of the jail so frequently that we're aware that they struggle with this. So we're going to ask those pertinent questions and identify those people right up front.
Now, you're saying that there's a lot of training that goes on now for officers. You started working in 83 with the Sheriff's Department.
Right, 1983, yes.
And you
sir.
Were – the mental health unit was one of your first assignments?
It was. I worked in the mental health unit at the old workhouse for 2 years. I was assigned there as a young officer. And I tell you, I came in. There was no training. They told you what unit it was you were watching, and you got the gist of it. Older officers would give you some guidance here and there. And you came to know a lot, just a hands-on experience with the mentally ill. And, it's a hard job because a lot of times you're dealing with erratic behavior, and particularly if you're not trained and you haven't developed that skill, you can make mistakes. And quite frankly, you know, it can be a dangerous job if you're not careful and you don't have good communication skills and relate well with those kinds of situations.
Joanna, how is local law enforcement doing in dealing with people with mental illness?
I think they're doing a great job in identifying the people in the population that have the mental illness and having an open dialogue with the mental health providers and bringing in treatment staff through Talbert House and other community providers to wrap around services around the client so that when they do exit the jail and enter the population, they're much more stable and able – they have some more coping skills to be able to deal with this and be successful in the community.
Mm-hmm. Roy, what are some of the major challenges that you face in working with the mentally ill in jail?
Well, I think one of the first things we run into is that so many of these individuals come in and they're not on their medicines, and so they have been destabilized. So trying to get them stabilized on some medications as quickly as possible so their symptoms will abate is probably one of the biggest challenges. In addition to that, some of the clients don't want to be on their medicine, so oftentimes they will stay there and they will have these psychotic symptoms for extended periods of time until they can possibly get over to Summit where they might be stabilized there.
Are they allowed to – so they're allowed to refuse to take their medication?
They are allowed
even
to refuse.
The court has ordered them to take it?
Well, the court doesn't order them to take their medicine while they're in jail. I think when they get to Summit, they have to take it there. But in the jail, they still have a choice. I think we've only had maybe one judge who actually court-ordered someone to get medicine.
Charmaine, what are the challenges that the officers face in working with the mentally ill?
Well, as I said, they're interspersed throughout our jail. Oftentimes, the officers don't really know the diagnosis of the person. So they can be in a unit with 50, 60 different inmates, and certain particular inmates can be having mental illness issues, and our officers simply have to fret that out by watching behaviors, understanding and talking to the prisoners. They need to get out there and interact with those prisoners, and we're 24/7, so, you know, as first shift comes on, second shift comes behind them. And they're briefing each other, and basically they talk about the people they're supervising and they're managing. So, it's hard in the jail because sometimes mental illness, the people that struggle with mental illness will act out in violent ways.
Sometimes, it can be somewhat dangerous then.
Oh, it certainly can. And, the unfortunate part of it is, we do have to restrain those people sometimes, and we do it in the most compassionate way possible. But, for a young officer or any really corrections officer in a facility, it's difficult to put someone in a chair where you actually have to strap down their wrists and their ankles and immobilize them. It's difficult to deal with that very destructive behavior that can sometimes be spitting and biting and things that, you know, society, you know, typically we don't talk about those things. But those are things that a corrections officer experiences really on a pretty frequent basis inside a jail. And, you know, we train our officers to talk, and they do a lot of talking. And if you come into our jail and watch our officers interact with the inmates, the very first thing that's going to come to your mind is we're very compassionate. It's not what maybe the general public might think, right? We're going to ask questions. And I tell you, quite frankly, I know many people who struggle with mental illness because of their association with the jail. And I'm very proud to say that when they see me on the outside, they feel very comfortable approaching me and talking to me, interacting with me, as they do with all of the officers that, you know, work throughout our jail.
Yeah, in the restraint area, you know, it's important to note that, you know, those individuals, even though they're strapped in, they're being viewed by a nurse every 10 or 15 minutes to make sure,
absolutely,
you know, that their health is in good shape, that they're not being restrained too tightly. Sometimes we have to give them a shot. There are times when they can get a shot that will calm them down, and sometimes that will then allow us even maybe to get them started on some medicine once they've calmed down.
Or do you contact the families of these people when possible to help calm them down and help convince them to take their medications?
We have done that in the past. You know, the families sometimes get involved. Sometimes they will initiate contact with us. But usually the families, you know, don't necessarily have any more influence on getting them to take their medicines than we might in the jail or they might out in the community.
Is some of the difficulties, I mean, really, you're asking jails and prisons to handle a role that they're really not, isn't their primary role.
Absolutely. Well, you know, our officers are so multifaceted. I mean, we're mental health workers, we're social workers, we're the police, we're jail service officers. I mean, we bring a whole host of services when we walk in that jail door because, you know, we're managing behavior, and we're managing the behavior of people who don't want to be there and are experiencing difficulties while they're there.
So, right, they're struggling and they're suffering themselves.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, we train for that. Our officers are very well trained. You know, in contrast to what happened to me when I was a young officer coming in the jail, I mean, I basically was sent to a unit and given a bunch of keys, and the officer that relieved me said goodbye.
This is your job.
Yeah. Have a nice day. And I said, well, what am I going to do? What should I do? And she said to me, oh, you know, the inmates will tell you. They'll tell you what to do. And they did all day long. So, you know, that's how I was trained.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, here to talk about the treatment options for local inmates with mental illness in jail. Our Court and Jail Services Division Commander for the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office, Major Charmaine McGuffey, the Director of the Mental Health Unit at the Hamilton County Justice Center, Dr. Roy Fouch, and Associate Director of Talbert House, Joanna Lowry. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Sarah in North Avondale. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
So I'm interested. You guys have been using the term serious mental illness.
Right, which was one of the terms they used in the original study was they said the percentage of seriously mentally ill.
Right. So I'm interested in hearing if there's any difference between something like serious anxiety, serious depression, and serious things like psychosis or schizophrenia, and how those differences are dealt with differently in the system.
Well, I can start off, and I'm sure we can get to that in a number of ways. But normally, The severely mentally ill are made up of those that have the diagnosis typically of things like schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, some of the more serious, you know, the bipolar disorders, major depression, you know, disorders where there may be hallucinations, delusional thinking, things of that nature. Some of these things, I think, are kind of like on a continuum. Depression, for example, can be major, where you actually have hallucinations, to more situational depression. Anxieties can be things that are related to post-traumatic stress disorder, where there have been trauma involved, to generalized anxiety disorder and other lesser forms. So when I think of severely mentally disabled, it relates more to those specific diagnoses.
Correct. And the jail does a very good job of bringing in, recognizing these illnesses and bringing in community partners into the actual jail units and into treatment settings, so that the inmates get the best care and that they get the best practices, so that they're getting the skills that they need to be successful in the jail and enter the community in a healthy way.
Sarah, did you have any other questions?
Yes. So one other thing, just I was interested if there are any statistics on people who are mentally ill being victims of these sorts of crimes as opposed to perpetrators of crimes that would end up in the system.
Yeah, I think oftentimes they are victims because they are more vulnerable. So I think, you know, they're kind of on both ends of the spectrum, you know, probably more victimized than perpetrators, but, you know, there's a combination of those.
Right. And I think, you know, too, our jail service officers are trained to be aware of that. They're trained to watch the population and make sure that those people that are vulnerable because of mental illness are not victimized inside the jail, because certainly there's a danger there for them too.
And in the jail, actually, those that are most vulnerable, we keep on the mental health unit. It was mentioned earlier, there's 48 beds. That's just on the men's unit. And then there's another 24 slots for the women. So those that have maybe a MRDD background or just, you know, harder to stabilize, more fragile, those kind of folks would stay on our unit.
So, Roy, what are the options? What kinds of treatment programs are available in the jail for these folks?
Well, we have five therapists or social workers that work with the individuals. One of our main functions is to keep people safe. So we do have, on a daily basis, like today, I think we had 8 people who were on suicide watch. So we have areas where those people are kept. And so we do crisis intervention. So we're there 7 days a week inside the jail. And we're doing rounds every day during the week. On the weekends, we just see the ones that are on suicide watch. So we do crisis intervention. We try to connect individuals to our psychiatrist. We have a full-time psychiatrist. We schedule people in for appointments. We get people on medicine as quickly as possible. We work with the outside agencies to find out what kind of medicines they're on. And more recently, we've actually started to allow those agencies to bring in their injectable medications, which actually work better for some of our folks who have difficulty staying on their medicine, so they can get a shot and it can last from 2 weeks to 4 weeks.
And you're doing a lot of collaborating with outside agencies like Talbert House.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's also important to recognize there's the mental health court, which has a specialized judge that recognizes the special needs of the clients and that their behaviors may look different, and the need for stabilization, medications, wraparound services so that they can be successful, and the thinking that if we can get them the right treatment, then they won't be interacting anymore in the jail system.
Yeah, and I've seen that particular court work very well. The judge is very understanding, and you know, they give them extra opportunities to manage themselves, and part of that managing themselves is taking their medicine. So
correct.
They'll kind of reduce the sentence if they stay on their medicine. They don't do drugs, So they are trying to help those. And there's also drug court that does some of the same kind of things.
Yeah, we'll be discussing that, the mental health courts, mm-hmm. in the next segment of the show. Joanna Talbert House, tell me about the programs that it offers to help people.
So we actually go into the jail units, or there are separate sites that the inmates are taken to. So they get specialized treatment in coping skills and how to take their medications appropriately, just involving their families in the treatment and wrapping, as Major McGuffey said, wrapping those services around the clients, because oftentimes they haven't known that these resources exist or that there are ways to cope with their illnesses. And once they learn those, they're more successful.
Roy, is there anything that you think more that could be done in dealing with this issue?
Well, I think the community needs to continue to work on providing the array of services that are needed and to identify services maybe that might be lacking. I know housing can be a major problem for a lot of our folks, getting clean housing, you know, and stabilizing them in the housing. There are some individuals who choose to be homeless and who choose to do drugs. I mean, it's interesting. We were talking about one fella today, and we were going to wrap all kinds of services around him, and he said, I don't want anything. And he comes back to the jail every once in a while and stays there for 3 to 6 months, especially in cold weather. And we're going to continue to work with him and try to get him help. But I think, finding gaps in the system, you know, in the community, to find out what other things we can provide that will reduce recidivism, I think that's a good step.
And, you know, for the justice system, for those uniformed officers, law enforcement and officers who work inside the jail, training is our key. I mean, you know, training officers to recognize mental illness, training officers to build that rapport with people, how to interact with people who are having issues out on the street, so that we're not bringing them in, maybe beat up a little bit because the officer doesn't understand and maybe was assaulted by the individual. You know, those kinds of scenarios we want to avoid. We really want to create a compassionate and interactive conversation with people who are mentally ill. And I think that training for us it's absolutely key. We're providing it for our jail service officers. It's a must in this day and age.
Joanna?
Yeah, the officers we have found have been very helpful in helping collaborative effort with treatment services, getting the clients the care that they need, but also balancing that security that is essential to the jail system.
Mm-hmm. What more do you think needs to be done? What do you see as that we need to do to help in this situation, this issue?
I think continued conversations like this, recognizing that it is an issue and that it takes really the jail and the community working together to provide treatment for the clients when they're in the jail and after.
And Joanna, Charmaine, and Roy, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And coming up, we'll look at services for mentally ill prisoners once they've been released. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.